This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. We knew it was only a matter of time, but now it is official. This week, officials confirmed the first case of a new, more contagious variant of COVID here in Massachusetts, a Boston woman in her 20s who traveled to the UK earlier this month. Some studies suggest the variant could increase the likelihood of transmission by as much as 50%. All of that as controversy continues over the state's early rollout of the coronavirus vaccine. So we wanted to take some time to talk about it and answer your questions with another edition of our Ask the Doctors segment. Call with what you want and need to know about the new variant, about vaccines, about infection rates right now, about how to stay safe. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Here with us this afternoon is Dr. Eric Rosenberg, who is Director of Clinical Microbiology and Director of Clinical Microbiology and an Infectious Disease Physician at MGH and a professor at Harvard Medical School. We also have Dr. Benjamin Linus, an Infectious Disease Physician at Boston Medical Center, an Associate Professor of Medicine and Epidemiology at the Boston University School of Medicine. Dr. Rosenberg, Dr. Linus, really appreciate you joining us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, happy to be here.
So, Dr. Rosenberg, I'm going to start with you, and I want to ask you a couple of questions about this variant. What was your reaction when you heard it was official that it was here? Were you shocked? Was it a sigh of resignation? How did you react?
I think that we had a lot of forewarning, and my expectation was that it was already here by the time we learned that it was brought in by a traveler from the UK. We knew recently that 10 other states were able to detect this viral variant, including New York State and Connecticut. So it was really just a matter of time before we were able to identify it here. So I wasn't surprised at all. This is how viruses work and circulate, and I don't think it would be a surprise to anybody.
And what do we know about this variant, Dr. Rosenberg?
So this particular variant is called B.1.1.7, and it was believed to originate in the United Kingdom probably sometime in mid to late September. And what we know and what makes this particular variant unique is that it has a mutation called the N501Y mutation, where, without getting too far into the weeds, there's an amino acid substitution in the spike protein. And the spike protein is what the virus uses to bind to human cells and gain entry into human cells. And so most of the time when virus mutates, it really doesn't have any effect. Sometimes when a virus mutates, it'll hurt the virus, and it will cause the virus to be less effective. This particular mutation increases binding of that spike protein to the human ACE receptor. And unfortunately, it causes virus to more efficiently get inside of the cell and replicate. So we know that it's more transmissible, and we think it's more transmissible because cells are making more virus.
So, Dr. Linus, that is not great news. Are there extra precautions people should take, or is it just double down on what you're already doing? Masks, social distancing, avoid large groups, et cetera.
Yeah, sure. So it's not fantastic news. I agree. I think we all can agree on that. At the same time, I think the silver lining here is that there's every reason to believe that the same non-pharmacologic interventions we've been using since March, masking, distancing, hand washing, cleaning surfaces, should be effective to prevent the B.1.1.7 variant as well. It's just that that variant might put more pressure on all of our efforts, right? Because if it's more infectious, then it's even more important that we do a good job masking and keeping our distance. So I think the answer is to double down on what we're doing now and to remain aware of the fact that that virus is out there. We need to be keeping our eyes on the scene, and it's possible that some of the transmission sort of the rate of transmission that we've come to appreciate and expect over this winter, it could turn upward again. And I think we need to be ready and to see if that happens.
Okay. And before we go to the phones, last question for you. The vaccines that we have in distribution now, what do we know about their efficacy against this B.1.1.7 variant?
So the vaccines we have now, we believe are effective against B.1.1.7. So that's good news. The vaccines actually have a really robust response against the spike protein. And so there's a lot of reason to think that one point mutation So one substitution of the spike protein hopefully will not completely reconfigure it such that our vaccines will not be effective. So I think we can be reassuring there. That being said, people should be ready for the fact that viruses do mutate, and it is possible that a virus could eventually escape the vaccine. And that's why I think it's important that we have our eyes on what's called genomic surveillance to understand what's happening with the variants of the virus that are circulating out there, to be testing them. And I think we can be optimistic that the new mRNA platforms that a lot of these vaccines are based upon, we should be able to adjust our vaccine over time. But we have to keep eyes on it. But for now, the vaccine is working against B.1.1.7.
All right, so the calls are coming in, Drs. Rosenberg and Linus. So I'm going to go to the phones, 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to ask your question. We've got Kim on the line from Brookline. Kim, what's your question?
Hi, I'm not sure if you can answer the question or not, but I'm having a hard time finding an answer, so I thought I'd try. My elderly parents are now residents of Florida, but they've been bubbled with my family since the pandemic has started up here in Massachusetts. And now that the vaccine's starting to roll out for their age group, we're not sure if they have to travel to Florida to get vaccinated because that's where their residence is, or if they can find a way to be eligible here in Massachusetts. And I'm hitting roadblocks on even how to sign them up.
All right. Thank you for that, Kim. Dr. Rosenberg, is that something you can help with? Do you know the answer?
I think that the smartest move that I would recommend is that your parents, as they're elderly, stay with you because A, they're with family and in a safe bubble, and B, there's less virus in Massachusetts in circulation than there is in Florida. So I think that they should stay here, and I would expect that if they are here, a simple call to the Department of Public Health, once the vaccine is being rolled out to your mom's wave or grouping, and I would highly doubt there would be any problem in getting her vaccinated here.
And again, Dr. Rosenberg, that grouping, Governor Baker has moved people age, I want to say 75 and older, into phase two, sort of the middle of phase two, correct?
I believe that is correct.
All right, let's go back to the phones here, 800-423-8255, to ask your question. We've got Claire on the line in Essex. Claire.
Hi, my question is, my father right now is 90 years old, and he currently lives in Maine. He just got a call that he has his first vaccine appointment tomorrow. My question is, after he has his second dose, is it safe for him to come stay with us here in Massachusetts so I can take care of him?
Dr. Linus.
Thanks. This is a question. Versions of this question are coming to me more and more frequently, sort of what does the world look like post-vaccine and what is safe and what's appropriate? And I can't provide anyone a definitive answer, but I hope we can provide a way to think about it and make decisions. So at first, there's the question of for personal safety. Once a person's vaccinated, could they, you know, once I'm vaccinated, for example, could I go and visit loved ones who I've been missing for a year? Could I hold my grandchild? Things like that. I think at a personal level, the answer is yes. That's what it means to say that the vaccine is 95% effective. There's still a few things that we're trying to figure out about whether or not it's possible to transmit after vaccinated, but I would feel comfortable engaging in some of those activities after I've been vaccinated. There's another level to the decision-making, though, which is what's the appropriate thing to do now in the midst of a pandemic when the vast majority of the population is not vaccinated and it's still critically important that we're wearing masks and keeping our social distance. And I've been thinking a lot about that, about what the right approach is. You know, I've heard stories of people who can't wait to rip off their mask and go down to Florida and go into a crowded nightclub. And I would perhaps suggest that that sort of bald-faced flouting of distancing norms simply because you are vaccinated is probably counterproductive right now and not appropriate. At the same time, we've all been hurting for a year, and if people have personal needs to see loved ones, and I didn't hear all the details, but it sounds like there's really a care need here, then some of these private joys, I think, we need to be able to re-experience those. I think it's really important. And so I would feel personally safe interacting after the vaccine. And I think that if people can enjoy those sort of private joys that we've been missing for a year and reconnect with loved ones in a way that's not out in the face of people who are not vaccinated and is not creating sort of a stratified society whereby some people get to have all the luxuries and others still have to stay in their house. then that's where we should be heading until such a time that there's enough of us vaccinated that we can really start to reemerge and try to make the world look like it used to be.
We're talking to Dr. Benjamin Linus of Boston Medical Center and Dr. Eric Rosenberg of MGH, taking your coronavirus calls at 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Jack on the line from Jamaica Plain. Hi, Jack. What's your question?
Hi. I have a severe allergy to ACE inhibitors. How scared should I be of COVID-19 in general, and especially given the increased transmissibility of this virus? Should I be going into isolation?
Oh, Jack, I can hear the worry in your voice. Dr. Rosenberg, do you have a way to help answer Jack's question?
I could certainly try, and I do also hear the anxiety in your question, Jack. The whole concept around ACE inhibitors is that the virus uses the same receptor that some of the drugs that are ACE inhibitors bind to. But to my knowledge, there's no reason to think that if, God forbid, you are infected because you have an allergy to an ACE inhibitor, that you would do any worse than anybody else. So I think you can take a deep breath and rest assured that having an allergy to ACE inhibitors isn't going to put you at increased risk. But with that said, nobody wants to get infected. So I would just echo what Dr. Linus has been saying about continue to wear masks, continue to practice great hand hygiene and social distance, and I think you're going to be just fine.
Thank you for that, Dr. Rosenberg. I'm going to pick up another call. They just keep coming in. We've got Lynn on the line from Needham. Lynn, go ahead.
Hi. I'd like to ask, I just recovered from COVID with symptoms and feeling great, but I'd like to know if I'm immune to the new variant.
Lynn, I'm glad to hear you're feeling better now. That is good news. Dr. Linus?
So more generally, before we get to the variant, there's data out now that it's really, you know, we've suspected that people are immune after infection. And now it's there's some new data out to show that, yes, people who have been infected are immune for at least 3 months. We don't know what happens after that. Doesn't mean to say they're no longer immune, but our sort of data horizon ends. And in terms of whether you would be immune to the new variant, no one's asked me that question. I'm thinking it through with you here, but the vaccine, right, everything that we were saying about vaccines still being effective is likely true of your natural antibody as well. So I would expect you to be immune to the B.1.1.7 variant. But remember that we don't know the duration of that immunity. And I still would, you know, I think it's important to continue to wear masks and continue to distance, both for your own safety and also for the fact that we're in the middle of a pandemic and we're doing this together. And so we all have to be wearing masks in order to keep that front, you know, keep that front robust.
You know, I want to take a second to talk to the two of you and ask you a question. We as a team here at Radio Boston and at WBUR, we've been reflecting a lot on coverage over the last year. And last year in March, when Mayor Marty Walsh announced and the City of Boston and the South Boston Allied Veterans Council announced that there would not be a St. Patrick's Day parade, we remember how devastating that was. And then today, the news comes again, and it's almost as if, but of course, this year we won't have a St. Patrick's Day parade. They said in part of the announcement, quote, "We look forward to finally seeing you all again in 2022. No one has a crystal ball. But is there hope with the way the vaccine is rolling out, with what we know about the virus, that we could look forward to seeing them again in spring of 2022 and some of these other festivities and rituals and cultural happenings that have been such a part of our Boston community?" If either of you would like to answer or reflect on that, I'd welcome it.
Well, maybe I'll start and just echo the sentiment that we've all been traveling down a really long, dark tunnel. And there's been so many unknowns and so many twists and turns and curveballs that we don't understand. But I do think we have two major reasons to start to see light at the end of the tunnel. The first is that we have vaccines that are about as efficacious as a vaccine will ever be, and they are truly on their way. And if we can all just sit tight and be patient, we're all going to get vaccinated within the next couple of months. And then the second reason to be optimistic without introducing politics is that we're having a change in administration tomorrow. And I would expect a much more robust federal response from people who really understand the issue and know how to, you know how to help us get through this. So I think for those two reasons, I'm more optimistic today than I have been at any other time during this really terrible pandemic.
That is good to hear. Dr. Linus, anything you want to add?
I agree with both those statements. I think there is reason to be optimistic. The one thing that I would say that I've thought about and talked with others about is that it will take a little time for things to really get back to, quote, normal. Because if you think about that, first, what has to happen is there needs to be enough vaccine and enough new response that actually things do get back to close to normal. And then also, I think we're going to have to live that way for long enough that people feel comfortable enough that things are normal, that they start doing normal, you know, quote, normal things again. So there's not going to be a day where a bell rings and we all get to run outside and take off our masks and celebrate. So I just don't want people to look forward to that day, because I think it might be disappointing if they're waiting for a special event like that. But at the same time, I agree. I have every reason to be optimistic that certainly by next year at St. Patrick's Day, we should be able to have a parade.
Good. All right. We're going to try to grab one last call here. We've got Julio on the line from Newton. Julio, what's your question?
I wanted to know if there's a procedure to avoid throwing away vaccines in case somebody doesn't show up to their vaccination appointment.
It's a good question, Julio. Doctors, which of you would like to answer that?
Perhaps neither. I'll take a shot. I mean, quite honestly, I can't answer that question. I mean, one way is that, right, you try to get someone in to fill the slot. I honestly don't know the procedure for once the vaccines come out of cold storage. I suspect it can't go back into cold storage, although I'm actually not the expert for that. But that's what the consideration is. Once it comes out of the ultra cold storage, it has a shelf life of hours. And if you haven't used it by the end of that shelf life, it is wasted. So I think that speaks to the fact of why it's really difficult. This rollout is an absolutely epic logistical effort, really historic logistical effort, because it really does come down to timing of a couple of hours in some cases, right? And we're trying to do a huge volume in a very fast time for a two-dose vaccine across the entire population. It's not easy, and I think we've seen that already.
Anything you would add, Dr. Rosenberg?
I think that's right. I'm sure that the folks setting up these logistics have some sort of system in place where they're assuming that there will be some people who don't show up and have a strategy for how to not waste that vaccine, albeit I'm not sure exactly how they're doing it. I'm sure that very little to no vaccine is going to waste. I will say, if you do have an appointment, show up. It's definitely in your best interest and in all of our best interests to get everybody vaccinated as soon as humanly possible.
And I'll say this, I feel like this discussion is a bit of a microcosm for something that I think is going to change in the coming couple of weeks with the new administration. But it's that when you get down to these details of vaccinating, it's a logistics question. It's operations. It's actually not at that point public health. And when you have the doctors and the public health people talking about it, it's not actually what we do. We set priorities for who should get vaccine, understand how it works, invent the vaccine, analyze, you know, assess its effectiveness. But if the question is, how do I get this vaccine into 200 million people as fast as possible, we need to make sure we have the right voices at that table. And I propose that some of those voices are in the National Guard and the military, because I think that those are the supreme logisticians in our society at this time. But you hear it here, right? Like, Eric and I are not the people doing the logistics of putting the vaccine in and out of freezers.
All right, that is as many calls as we have time for today. Callers, if we didn't get to you today, you know we will stay in dialogue with you. We will continue to do this because we continue to be lucky enough to have doctors who will help us. And today we had Dr. Benjamin Linus, you were just hearing him, an infectious disease physician at Boston Medical Center, an associate professor of medicine and epidemiology at the Boston University School of Medicine, along with Dr. Eric Rosenberg, excuse me, director of clinical microbiology and infectious disease physician at Massachusetts General Hospital, also a professor at Harvard Medical School. It was great of both of you to join us. Thank you.
It was a pleasure to be here. Thanks a lot.